Got your phone with you? Are we both phoneless? We're going to solve that in a minute. My phone's on the front row also. Two phone numbers are going up on the screens. Here's the question this morning. We want to hear from you. Just name one bad idea. Don't give us a, don't write your first term paper on us this morning, okay? Short, one bad idea. Give us one bad idea that you've come to the conclusion we should just not do this anymore. Bad idea. One bad idea. Do you have one?
Me, myself?
Yeah, you yourself.
Things we shouldn't do.
Yeah, I'll give you one. So this morning, right? This morning in the earlier service, I was saying there was a time when the girls were little, they wanted brownies. Their father decided to make the brownies because I wasn't out of the house. He's very capable of making brownies. He followed the recipe, reached for the oil. He reached for the only oil that's in the house, which was olive oil. How bad could that be? Don't have olive oil brownies. Don't make olive oil brownies. That's a bad idea, okay? You got one?
Our first response, don't always say yes. Always saying yes. Always saying yes is a bad habit.
Always saying yes. I have skydiving is a bad idea. Oh, your mama loves you that you said that. Skydiving is a bad idea. Skipping work on Mondays. Standing in line for Dunkin' Donuts, La Sierra, for 6 hours this week. Who did that?
Wearing heels to church.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Not according to at least one or two people.
I'm still back. Did you really 6 hours? Did you wait for your donuts 6 hours? You didn't. 4 a.m.? Get out. What? Was it a good donut? It's a sad day when the big news in La Sierra is Dunkin' Donuts. Come on. Or should I just get on board with the neighborhood? Are you all happy Dunkin' Donuts came to town? All right, I'll get on board. Whatever.
Bad idea, killing a black widow spider with your bare hands.
Bad idea.
Are you alive? You can still text. So.
Bad idea, drinking expired milk. Amen. Putting salt in a smoothie, that's a bad idea.
Eating bad fish.
Bad fish, as in spoiled.
I would assume.
That's wrong. Texting while driving.
Mullets.
Mullets. That's a bad idea.
Waiting till the last day before college starts to check which books you need. Sorry, Jasmine.
That's a bad idea. Using pancake syrup jar for storing your oil. Oh, that could be bad.
Bad idea. Not appreciating your mom.
That is like at the top of bad ideas.
Very top.
Too much Starbucks is a bad idea.
Shaving your back. Speaking from experience, I assume.
That person also sent this one in. Man burns.
Beautiful. Okay. Bungee jumping on a full stomach. I can see why. Neon colors. I like them.
Garlic toothpaste.
Ooh.
Walking from the university to Stater Brothers all by yourself to shop.
Not surfing enough. This is a man after my own heart right here.
Getting out of the car on the wild safari ride. Dean Obed, that's a bad idea.
Eating a full bag of hot Cheetos.
No, that's also Dean Obed.
Oh, fair enough.
Okay, I'm guessing.
And trespassing.
Trespassing is a bad idea. You got the last one? Yeah. Trespassing. These are all considered bad ideas. You see, there's lots of ideas in the world. Some of them are not so good. They're bad. Some of the bad ones actually turn harmful. Some ideas are bad, but we don't know they're bad until they are. Most of us don't have a strategy to set out and create a bad idea, right? It's a good idea until it's bad, and then we know it after it's bad. And some bad ideas eventually become harmful. For the freshmen that just joined us, welcome to your church on the corner of your campus family. And we've been studying Psalm 145 in the Old Testament for the last 3 weeks. We've learned some things about this psalm. We have learned that it's a favorite, right? We've learned in 21 verses that there's no trouble, there's no plot line, there's not a hero to cheer for, there's not a villain to hiss and boo. Everything, in fact, in Psalm 145 comes up God. It's 21 verses of praise. In fact, the psalm is called Praise. It's the only psalm with just that title, Praise. Praise for the goodness that is powerful and for a power that is all goodness. This is Psalm 145 that we've been reading for a few weeks now. Interesting thing about the psalm and the text we're going to read this morning, we come to this text, verse 9. The Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all that he made. From this verse now to the end of the psalm, this will be our word. The Lord is good to all. The Lord has compassion on all that God made. The Lord is good to all generations. He'll stoop down for those who are low. He'll stoop for all who are bent over. All flesh, all worries. We'll get this all word again and again and again, 16 times in this psalm. See, the poet's not being subtle. When poets do things like this in their poem, in their song, they want us to pay attention. The Lord is good to all. The Lord is compassionate, has compassion for all. The poet, who is the psalmist, says to us that the future is full of all. The future is full of all. This might not be a troubling psalm for us here today. When we open scripture together, we try and imagine if we were these people, though, the first communities repeating the song, singing the hymn out loud, how would it feel and sound? How would it feel and sound knowing that this psalm, we think they sang it, the earliest communities sang it three times a day in their home. Do you sing anything three times a day? I don't. I mean, we eat three times a day, right? Do you have a motto or a charge or a favorite song you listen to three times a day? For ancient Israel, three times a day, everything stopped and they said, recited 21 verses of a psalm. Takes about 2 minutes in English. Can you just imagine our days, everything pause and we go through 21 verses. And then when they gather, this is among their favorite psalms to sing and pray out loud. So it might not be strange for us, but then we remember the community reciting this hymn together. We remember that this is a community that has a different storyline than maybe what we have. The community with great-grandparents, Abraham and Sarah, they have a different storyline, Abraham and Sarah, right? This is the story they've passed down through the generations, recorded earlier in the Bible, Genesis chapter 12. There comes a time when Abraham and Sarah, they leave their comfortable life. It's a pretty cushy life, actually, and God tells them to go. Genesis 12, verse 1, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you. I'll make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great so that you'll be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and I'll curse them. I've got your back. If they cross you, I'll cross them, God says to Abram and Sarah. So all the families of the earth will be blessed. There are five promises wrapped up in the family history and the story that's passed on from generation to generation that God specifically, uniquely, particularly pulled on this family, plucked up this family. This is the family God will bless. He'll make their name great. That means known and powerful. He'll bless them with wealth and flocks and goodness and babies. He'll bless them in such a way that other people will be talking about this family. It's this huge promise in the beginning of the Bible because Abram and Sarah, many of you know, they're old. They have no children. They're now wandering, right? They have no idea where they're going. They don't have a possibility to create anything on foot without a family. And here comes this huge promise, as if God's going to open the sky, move mountains and desert, and make these two his favorite. If this is the story that your family has told, my grandma and grandpa, they're something. They're God's favorite. If this is the story your family has been told, then I imagine it could feel scandalous that one day this new poem song sneaks into family worship and all of a sudden we're singing about all of God's flesh and all of God's children and all those who are down low and all who are bent over and all who are hungry and all flesh that will praise my God, our God. I think this would be a scandalous song to teach your family and your your children, that it would be disruptive of your normal, scandalous, because you've already been shaped by a different story, and here come some new words. We've been talking about words the last 3 weeks. The words we use shape our ideas, and they shape our community, and they make the place we call home. We're making the place we call home for our students at the university and our students at the academy and for all the generations coming up through all the schools around us. We're making a place by the way we think and teach and talk about our God. I think it would be scandalous for Israel 3 times a day to pause now and learn a new idea, commit to a new idea. It's as a fresh conviction is permeating the air that all God's creatures are actually favored. Because it's sort of what everybody wants, right? To be favored. Doesn't everybody want that? This video I'm going to show you, researcher with his little monkeys, right? Plucked out of a TED Talk. Maybe you've seen it. It's fascinating. Watch the monkey on the left. The monkey on the left. The monkeys are side by side in a cage, and they're involved in an experiment. They have a rock. They're given a rock by the scientist, and they just have to return the rock, and for the rock, they'll get their little piece of food. This is how it plays out.
I'm getting grape, and you will see what happens. So she gives a rock to us, that's the task, and we give her a piece of cucumber and she eats it. The other one needs to give a rock to us, and that's what she does. And she gets a grape, and she eats it. The other one sees that, she gives a rock to us now, gets again cucumber. She tests a rock now against the wall. She needs to give it to us. And she gets cucumber again.
Jay, just started it halfway. I just want to watch the last half. Isn't it great? I want to watch the last half again where she bangs the rock on the wall. She's testing the rock. Is it the rock? Such an attitude. Such an attitude. There's a rock. She bangs it on the wall.
She tests a rock now.
There's something wrong with my rock.
Against the wall.
No.
She needs to give it to us. And she gets
cucumber
again.
What the heck? I want grapes! Right? Give me the grapes! I'm with her. I don't want the cucumber either, right? I want the grapes for lunch. It wouldn't matter how you started, who you started with, the one they would want what the other one had is what the experiment keeps showing again and again and again, because everyone wants to feel the same as the other. We all want to feel special. We all want to at least feel equal, right? It's the cry of the human heart. And here comes this psalm into the life of people, right on top of this reality of what they've been taught, that they are special, that they are favored, and they're now having to sing a new hymn permeating their house, their school, their playground, their community, their cars. The Lord is good to all the time, all generations, all the falling ones, all the bent down ones, all living things, all crying out ones, all flesh will praise my God. And they sing it again and again and again. The psalmist is not teaching us, friends, about the economy or the market. Psalmist is not teaching us about politics or political party affiliation. It's not about political correctness. The psalmist is teaching us about God. Lessons about God and what God values. And this is what they're reciting in their homes and in their worship with the hope that a new reality is being created. We absorb and we inherit our convictions. Sometimes we know where they come from, and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we absorb our convictions from our faith tradition. And when we come up against an old idea that's now bad and could be harmful, we have to pay attention. There are some of you here today who could think, well, this is no problem for me. I think it's as scandalous for Israel as it would be for a prophetic remnant movement to sing a psalm like this, a prophetic remnant movement that's taught the path to heaven is narrow and only few will survive, a prophetic remnant movement who now also needs to sing, the Lord is good to all, the Lord expects all in his future. It's scandalous and disruptive. I'm not favorite. The pronoun in the little song we sing at home has to change. There's a little song the girls sang when they were tiny ones that someone taught us or on a tape. I am special, I am special, yes I am. You are special, you are special. We are special, we are special, all are special, all are special. The song has to change. Everybody's favored. I think it's a scandalous idea in the Bible, and I think it still scandalizes us today. We have deep convictions. Some of them we're not even aware of, but you'll know when you get a pit in your stomach and when you bristle a little bit and when your face gets kind of messed up, something's bothering you, you'll know you're on top of a conviction you might not have known you even had. Sitting in the coffee shop on Thursday, working early in the morning, I had done a couple of hours of reading, making some notes, and I reached for my computer. I was ready to start working on a document. My computer bag was sitting just to the side of me and behind, right? We live in Southern California. We all know not to lose sight of our computer bag, right? This is not the first time we've heard this. Mine was not in the smartest place. I was standing at a high table for 2 hours. My bag was right here. There was a guy over here to my right who was just a little sketch, and I had been watching him. I thought, I don't know, why is he back here in the dark all by himself, and he's all covered up, and I don't know what he's doing. Makes me uncomfortable. I reached in the bag for my computer, and it is not there. Now, I expected a sympathy sigh from you all. If you lose your laptop, you lose your life, right? Students, graduate students, professors. I reach for my laptop and it's not there. Sketchy guy is also gone. Sketchy guy had left a couple minutes before. I remember hearing the door slam. It was odd. He was just up and gone really quick, and I looked up, the door slammed, and he's somewhere moved out of sight, and my laptop is gone, and I've put two and two together, and sketchy guy has my laptop, and my heart sinks. I have a few hours to get ready for a presentation, and I am mad and angry. I'm out in the parking lot looking for this guy. I begin to drive home thinking, retrace my steps. Did I lock all my files, the tax documents? Oh, is everything safe on my stolen laptop? I'm so worried. Walk into my house. Laptop is right on my counter, where I left it the night before at 12:30 when I went to bed. And I thought, I don't need to put it back. I'll do it in the morning. I'm telling you this morning that I went through all of these internal somersaults, all of these convictions, ideas about a guy I've never met, a guy who looks very different than me, was raised in a different way probably than I was, has very different privilege and assignment in life than I do, and I went through all of this internal combustive stuff because I thought a guy took my laptop, and my laptop is at home. I'm surprised that this happened to me this week because I didn't think I had this conviction. I'm surprised that I'm having to tell you today that we all have convictions deep inside of us that we're still working out. Maybe it didn't come from religious ideas. Maybe it did. Maybe somehow the idea of being favored and special sits so sweetly on us, we forget, we can't see how it's connected to so many other convictions in our world. On Thursday, I accused a guy of something he didn't do because he looked different than me. If we have old bad ideas that are harmful, we need to work them out, weed them out. With that fresh in my mind, I've been watching the same news feeds you've been watching, coming out of South Carolina this week, out of Charlotte, South Carolina, and his name is Keith Lamont Scott, and we have to all know it. I'm watching the same news feed as you, and we sit so far here removed, and we have convictions, or we're tired of hearing about the story, or we go on with our lives, and many of us, especially Christians, say, well, thank God this isn't our problem. It is our problem. It's our problem, friends. It's our problem. It's our problem if it's ever anyone's problem, because the Lord is good to all. It'll take the Christian church to say this together. It is our problem. We had this delightful meeting this week with the mayor, a few of the pastors. We had this delightful meeting. We spent an hour with him. The mayor cares deeply about people who wander the streets in Riverside. He calls them our neighbors without homes, our neighbors without homes. We call them the homeless. He cares deeply that Riverside imagined how to solve this problem. We had a delightful hour with the mayor. He reported to us that our city has passed a new ordinance recently called the No Camping Ordinance, where you are not allowed to camp outside any longer. Because we're tired of looking at our neighbors without homes. We don't want them on the sidewalks. We don't want them on the streets. We don't like the way it clutters up our city. So our city council passed an ordinance so we don't have to look at these people. I asked the mayor, where do the council members hope these friends will go? Yes, he said, yes. And the more we talked, the more we finally drilled down and got our thumb on top of the bigger problem. You see, the problem is not necessarily the people wandering around without homes. The bigger problem could be my convictions about these people. The bigger change that might need to happen is inside of me, inside of us. The transformation our city might need might have nothing to do with them. God cares for all. God stoops for all generations, all the falling ones, all the bent down ones, all living things, all crying out things, the psalmist says. And maybe we read it until we believe it, and we read it again, and we say it again. Maybe over and over in our homes, we shape reality with songs and verses just like this. Jay, will you give us those two or three sentences on the screen? The Lord is good to all. Say it with me, would you? The Lord is good to all the time. All generations, all the ones falling, all the ones bent down, all living things, all are crying out, all his works are for all his flesh. Maybe we keep saying it and we keep saying it until we're clear. If our church or our personal convictions don't have room for the all of humanity, there are some bad ideas that need to go. I don't know what it looks like exactly for you. I just told you one little part of my week and what it might mean for me. Old ideas are not necessarily the problem. Hey, it's a great idea to be chosen by God, because when God chooses a particular group of people to partner with, God has a bigger idea. Always when God chooses a particular group to help God with a bigger problem, the glory is for God, not for the particular people. Maybe the problem in the Genesis 12 experience is that they forgot the last line. We're to be a blessing for all the people. Old ideas are not necessarily the problem. Bad ideas that become harmful are the problem. And I'm thinking of the new students who came to our campus this week on this side of the street, and those who will be driving here tomorrow, returning for their classes. I'm thinking some of you freshmen who are here listening this morning, you have old bad ideas in your brain, in your mind, that you brought with you to campus. Some of them we gave you. Christianity or a faith tradition. Some came from your home. Some came from who knows where, what in culture. Some of you came to campus thinking you don't deserve to be here. Some of you came to campus thinking you don't deserve an education. Someone in your family said you can't do it. Lots of people said you can't afford it. Am I telling the truth? You came to the campus with bad ideas. Some people in your family said to you, you can go and enroll in university, but all your problems will chase you around. You are no good. Some of us have old ideas that are so harmful, full of shame, and full of lacking dignity and self-respect. And if you're listening this morning and you resonate with that, those old bad ideas, I want to tell you this morning, the Lord is good to you. The Lord stoops for you. The Lord feeds you. The Lord is reaching for you. And the Lord hopes the rest of us will be part of that solution. Old bad ideas. Do you have any? I do. Last week, some of you were here when we talked about memoir, what it is that all the generations get to use their voice and speak, what a memoir is when we write and share something only we can write and share. And I invited the church, said to the church, that today is not the end of the world. Today is a day to write your memoir, to be very clear, to use your voice, to tell the people in your life, what are you convicted of and why does it matter? I got an email the middle of the week. The email came from a gentleman in our congregation who was born in the year 1933. He said to me, you know, I was very intrigued by what you said in the sermon. I've been working on a memoir. I thought I'd send it to you. Here it is. Here it is. Students, those of you studying or hoping to be studying on our university campus, this is the life of a former university professor. Can I share you a few sentences? He's born actually in 1935. He says, I'm called a depression baby. But what does a little baby know about the depression, the Great Depression here in the United States? My house seemed okay to me. For a kid, it was just a house. We lived on a farm, a small community in the Central Valley of California. We had an outdoor privy. Everybody okay? No. An outdoor privy is a toilet. It had an outdoor bathroom. I do remember I didn't like that toilet. Before sitting down, I always took a stick and rattled it around in the hole to make sure no black widows. I lived on a farm with my father and my mother and my sister and my great-grandmother. This was our great-grandmother Chester's home and her farm. It's small, but it was big enough for us, two houses. As the years went by, as a child, I was expected to help with chores. I fed and watered chickens. That was not so bad, but there were two chores I really disliked, cleaning out the chicken droppings, and the other chore is going into the hen house to chase the chickens. Da-da-da-da-da. Didn't like that part of growing up. This little one begins to grow, and he remembers what it was to grow up in the Depression, and he remembers when some new people moved into town called the Okies. In my memory, we didn't have racism as an issue in our community. I never even knew of a Latino. Blacks were integrated into our schools. One of my friends was black, so I didn't think blackness was an issue. But Okies were another thing. There was a large encampment of Okies, and I remember being told that Okies were bad and different. Okies is the word used for the 20th century migrant community, the 20th century refugee problem in our country, when the great dust storms happened in the middle of the country and the Depression had also happened and everyone packed up whatever they had left and moved. And he's been told as a young guy when the Okies come to town that they're different. They live in a large encampment. Most of what made them different were the gypsies. The gypsies were in another category, he said. I remember World War II. I remember the war years. I seemed that everyone was encouraging hate. There were posters hanging around town with caricatures of Hitler and generals, and most of this I didn't think it rubbed off on me. But we would poke fun at the Nazis. We'd salute to Hitler and sing a little ditty, a particular song, and mess up our face and poke fun at what was going on. He goes on to talk about what that was like when everything was about the war, and when you could, all little children even could earn money for the war, to buy weapons for the war, and you could fill your little stamp book and turn it in downtown and get a prize for getting the most stamps and helping your town raise money. And if your town really succeeded, maybe you'd get your name put on the side of this World War II Japanese submarine, and you'd get promotion for your town. Big deal. This is just the shaping of one university professor. I'm intrigued at what happened between these years and the time he comes now into his eighth decade of life. In part of his memoirs, he writes to his children. He says to his children, tells them about his convictions about God. He says to his children, "My ideas about God are always changing and growing. My personal theology, it's shifted the older I've gotten. I know God loves all people." Norman Powell, Dr. Norman Powell on the left, retired from the School of Education. Jay, can you give me the screenshot? That Norman Powell on the left is that same little boy who was taught that Okies are different and to stay away from them, and that hate was something we could nurture. And in the intervening years, I don't know all the work he's done with God and the Spirit, but I'm looking at a man that leads our community services center across the street every Wednesday alongside Ruth Fagel. Every Wednesday, he stands in front of people who are the low and the bent over. Every Wednesday, he interacts. He gives them food and clothing. Every Wednesday, he tries to make the best connections for the low and the bent over. Every Wednesday, he asks no questions about their life, their status, their problems, their addictions. Every single Wednesday, he looks in their eyes and says, "All matter to God." It's a beautiful thing. The Lord is good to all the time, all generations, all the ones falling, all the ones bent down, all living things, all crying out things. And when the psalm ends, five chapters later, the psalmist reminds us that all flesh will praise our God. The future is full of the all. May we be too. Amen.